You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design every Thursday at 10, repeated Saturdays at 9 a.m. Welcome aboard, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Ron Jolly, you rock, sir.
Thank
you. It's just good to be here. And so happy.
Live in the studio.
Live and in the flesh, baby. You know, I should have written the date today, 9/18/25.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are in September and experiencing some crazy, as John mentioned, crazy mm-hmm. cool weather.
Mm-hmm.
Went swimming last night, even took a picture of the beach.
John, as in John Sluice.
Yeah, John
also
Sluice.
Also in the studio here.
CPA.
CPA.
I could thoroughly and completely introduce him. John Sluice, CPA with Intrust CPAs. And I was reviewing your notes from your website, Intrust CPAs, and realized again that you were originally with Plante & Moran.
Originally, yep.
Great yes.
Firm.
So John brings some real smarts with him in terms of tax and other things, too, which we're going to get into this morning. Happy to have you here, John. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Excellent. And then also, Heidi Cartwright, as you may have heard, our own managing director. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here. And boy, have I enjoyed this week in Traverse City. Mm-hmm. It has been beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just I think any of us taking a look around will appreciate where we live. And thinking, again, last night, we live in one of the most gorgeous areas on the planet. So let's do it, shall we?
Well, I'm glad that you guys got to enjoy it. I got to deal with the deadline, so that was
fun.
Oh, yeah.
I was joking. It's
the worst deadline because no one knows about it, and so you get no sympathy whatsoever. But it's the business extended deadline was Monday.
Oh. Yeah.
And so the challenges, these are the ones that are always the messy ones. They're the hard ones. They're the ones that, you know, you have to make final big conclusions that you just pushed off, but you can't push off anymore. So
6 months.
But while you got out to enjoy the weather, we got that. It's done now, so that in of itself is
Well, take it from us.
Week.
It was beautiful.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
Sorry, John.
No, that's okay. I'm glad others got to enjoy it.
Yes, we did. Everyone's talking about the Trump administration's One Big Beautiful Act signed into law on July 4th of this year. At nearly 900 pages, the OBBBA brings quite a few changes to U.S. tax laws. One of them is making permanent the TCJA, the tax.
That is correct.
What does that stand for, John?
Tax.
TCJA.
I forgot it because now I'm on the OBBBA. I would have been able to quote it before. So.
We can call
tax,
that the
Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
There you
Thank
go.
You.
That took
there.
A second there.
He gets the
I've shifted to the OBBA now, so, yeah. You know, it's
One Big Beautiful Bill Act. So it makes permanent those tax cuts. And seriously, I was thinking about what this meant in terms of those who watch the markets. They were concerned that it would get extended through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That extension really means something because the chair of Eli Lilly mentioned that specifically as the reason they decided to go ahead and build that $5 billion plant in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
That means tax cuts made permanent for corporations. So their costs are lower. They can compete worldwide. So while now it's almost yesterday's news, that does mean something in that it was made permanent, does it not?
Yeah, that's the biggest impact of this bill, right, is that it doesn't feel like there's going to be much change because it's been in place since the 2018 with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But by making it permanent, it has the biggest impact on dollars. It has the biggest impact overall. And making it permanent means comfort for people. It means you can plan. So you were just talking about the Eli Lilly there.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have built a building, which is very permanent, if it was only an 8 to 10 year thing, right? There are parts of this bill here that are temporary. Well, we'll say, sure, great, thanks for giving it to us, but we're kind of knowing that in 3 years it may or may not be here. So you're not going to make large plans or big moves. So businesses under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the business portion was permanent, but the individual was temporary. So there was the fear that it was going to go back up. And at the end of 2025, there was going to be all these sunsets. Biggest one of being is the tax rate. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act lowered the tax rates for individuals significantly. Well, it was set to go back up at the end of this year. So had this bill not passed, rates, everybody's income would have gone up. I don't want to say everybody.
Income
I'm
tax
an accountant.
Rate.
I can't say everybody. But right. Most people's taxes would go up because the rates went up. And so, therefore, you would have paid more taxes. So the cut that you feel here is the cut that you felt for the last several years, but it continues on. And that's the biggest impact and the biggest overall feeling that you should have on this code and the comfort level of this passing.
So really what we're saying is almost everyone is benefiting by the extension of those tax rates.
Yep. You will never get an account to say everybody is, right? We can't do 100%. That's not allowed. But almost everybody will be impacted by this positive, or will receive lower taxes.
So
unless your income
everyone.
Skyrockets. You know, you win the lottery.
Yeah.
And therefore, your tax rates are going to go up.
But you say we'll see lower tax. We won't see a change. Most people won't see a change in their tax rate. It stays the same, right?
It stays what it was as of the 2018 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So it's not going up. So again, that's where it's going to feel similar, but you're overall going to have a continued lower rate.
Yeah.
That is going to be permanent. I'm putting permanent in air quotes right now because it's as permanent as anything in government is. But it does, it gives that comfort level, right, because it takes a lot more to do. So
right. Permanent with Congress right now.
Right.
Yes.
And then now I gave my agenda for today's radio show, and it was scheduled to end right around 9 o'clock p.m. based on the volume of what's in there, too. So, you know, that's one of those that this is, there's a lot of little caveats, a lot of little complications within it. So I think the good generalization is that almost everyone will feel the benefit of it, but it is very individualized and it is very, like, nuanced on all the complications that are there.
All right. We have a question.
Yeah, we'll go to the phone. Karen in Traverse City is on the line for New Retirement Radio. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. I have a question in regards to capital gains. My mother, who is 85 years old, sold her home, which she's had for 50 years. She sold the home, made about $720,000. I was under the understanding that she did not have to pay capital gains on that, but now I'm hearing that anything over $250,000 profit, she does have to pay capital gains on?
That's correct. So a lot of the misnomers is that this is related to a personal residence or your primary residence. That it's tax-free. Well, it's tax-free up to $250,000 gain per person. Right. So what you have to do, so if she passed away and she was single at the time, she'd have her $250,000 exemption. If she was married prior to that, you can go back and look. Like, it does matter. There's a potential to have an increase in what's tax-free, depending on what happened before, right? So if it was in an estate or if it was for a husband or something along those lines, there could be part step-up from those. But if it's just her and only her, then it would be the $250,000. So that is correct.
Okay, because she was widowed 8 years ago, then it just reverts to her. She's still surviving, so it's just the $250,000 then.
If she was widowed 8 years ago and you're able to go back and do some, you know, some calculations and some documentation, there was likely a step up of what happened through the estate on his $250,000 as well that you can add inside of that. So you do have to do some documentations, and it's not a guaranteed and a foregone conclusion, but that is a possibility.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hang on a minute, if you would. So her cost basis, how was her cost basis to any extent?
Cost basis would also be inside. So we're talking 250 of a gain.
Plus the 250, okay. Right. So her cost basis, what she paid for it, and as well as improvements, all right?
Right. Plus part of the what went through the estate. Right. So if it went through the, depending on how it was held, if it did go through the estate, that's the key, depending on how it was held and jointly. So you got to look at that of whether it went.
So it was in a trust.
Right. Okay. So then you'll have to look if it went through that process and there was a step up basis that her husband at the time would have received at that time. That's a very complicated nuance. And so I don't, be very careful on how you do that. But there is that possibility if it did.
So if his estate was filed, if there was a filing done for his estate. Yeah, so you want to get with your tax consultant on that, okay?
Okay.
But the specific question that you're asking, it is the general answer is it's not all tax-free. Most people feel in general that, it's tax-free because most people actually don't receive a $250,000 gain. It's where she had held it for the 50 years is where you see that.
Right.
You would also look inside of there, Dennis, you hit onto it, the basis. You can go back and look at some of the improvements were there, right? So if it was their house the whole time, that deck that they built that they didn't deduct, the new roof that they put on, the irrigation repairs. And you can't do repairs, but you can do capital improvements. So really spend some time looking at what the basis is.
Okay, wonderful. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Karen.
As per usual, it's not as simple as it might seem.
I've waited my entire career to be able to give a straight answer within two or three words. It has yet to happen.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing. Now, speaking of a straight answer, you had said in our conversation that we had, I think it was a Monday? This week has just flown on by. To not pay any taxes is a kind of a foolhardy thing. To not pay taxes. So what specifically did you mean by that? And isn't it like a hateful thing to pay taxes, John? Really?
Yeah.
Given our society of hatred now, shouldn't we hate taxes?
So as an accountant, as a tax accountant, I always dislike paying taxes.
You loathe taxes.
I loathe
but
taxes
you don't hate
that
them.
Are not warranted or above what they should be.
Okay.
And this, what I was alluding to is more often than not, I'll have people will come in and say, well, I heard this from my neighbor, or my buddy from the church said this, or my friend said that, and I should really try in this. And the response there was, well, that might be perfect for them, but for you, it may or may not be a good answer. And what you hear and what you know might not be good. So now I'm going to go back, and this is another thing that we're talking about this morning, was that under this new bill, 88% of seniors are not going to be paying any taxes. Now, for many of them, that's a great thing. So for many of those individuals, not paying taxes is good.
On Social Security.
On Social Security. Well,
right.
It would be on,
So not paying taxes and paying taxes on Social Security, two different things. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
So.
All right.
For some individuals.
We're holding each other accountable here.
So for some individuals, not paying taxes is a good thing, right?
Right.
But if I'm talking to someone that's trying to significantly increase their wealth and build their wealth, or they have, let's say, $10 million or $3 million or $1 million in $1 million in an IRA account, and they're like, I'm paying no taxes. I'm like, well, that's not necessarily a good thing, because sometimes in order to build wealth, you have to pay taxes. The key is paying taxes at the right rate for you. And so when I say that, meaning if you're always in the 0% rate, okay. If you're in the 12% rate, maybe you should be in that rate. And if you go below that and not pay taxes, it's not a good thing because you had a one-year woohoo. You want to make sure you're consistent. That is more important in my mind. But for some people, it's in the 24% rate or the 37% rate. But the point being there is in order to build wealth, in my opinion, you need to pay taxes to really build the wealth. Because sure, if you get a deduction to not pay taxes, but that really meant you spent the dollars, right? So if you spent the dollars on a true investment, that's great. You bought an excavator and you're going to be able to turn that excavator into something that more revenue down the road. Fantastic. But if you get the deduction because you bought, let's say, an airplane and you over depreciated, that's not necessarily a good thing because the airplane cost you a whole lot of dollars. So it's not necessarily just because you get the deductions, it's not a good thing.
Now, deduction alone is in terms of an investment decision is a poor investment decision, because obviously you wanted to bring revenue and or prove justified given the purchase price. Now, our spouses may not necessarily agree with those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned briefly you thought we ought to have a show on communication between spouses and or significant others, but it just brings up into my mind talking about this sort of thing. Generally speaking, and we won't get into significant detail, but you mentioned spouses who actually talk through this stuff tend to do better, and it only makes sense.
I will agree with that statement. I did say that.
Yeah. So expounding on that, how basically no secrets in terms of this? What do you see in general in terms of success for those dealing with money between spouses or other?
I see money as a key core underlying issue in many marital disputes, right? And so, or partner disputes for that matter, right? And it's oftentimes, the best example I can give is we're all looking at an elephant, right? That's old analogy there, right? So one person might be looking at a foot, another one looking at the tail, another one looking at the trunk. And so you might hear something and say something and you interpret it one way. Your spouse might hear something or not hear something and interpret it a different way. And so disagreements and misunderstandings happen all the time. So in order to get through those, what you have to do is communicate and understand that they may not be wrong and they may not be right, but they have to understand and talk through so that you can step back and see, oh, we're actually looking at an elephant. Sure, what you saw was one thing, and that's not wrong, but it's not right. It's in the other person seeing the same thing. So
before buying the excavator, speak to your spouse or significant other about it. All right.
Yeah, and one point of clarification, just 88% of senior citizens will not pay taxes
Social
Security.
I'm going to read this. This is straight from, because I wanted to, it's a big percentage there. This is from the Council of Economic Advisors, otherwise known as the Executive Office of the President of the United States. So it's right from the White House. And this was really in defense because we might get to this later on how it's not really tax-free under the new law. They had talked about it being tax-free. They were trying to defend that. And so they say, the bill includes the largest tax break in American history for our nation's seniors. 88% of seniors receiving Social Security benefits will pay no tax on their benefits under the OBBB as a result of the total deductions exceeding their taxable Social Security benefits.
Okay.
So 88% is what they're saying of the seniors receiving Social Security. So now, again, whether we agree with that or not, that was one position, but it was a fairly authoritative one.
All right. Thank you for that.
So what's new in the Tax Act? Well, you know, we've talked about what's included as a part of, you know, the extension, but what are the new components that people should be aware of?
Well, this is where you're giving me until 8 o'clock tonight to talk, right? Yeah. Because if I were to go through all that is new, it would take that long. So there is a lot that's in there, right? So I'll hit on a couple of them on the higher level. One being that we alluded to this before the break there, but that $6,000 senior deduction is what it is. It was their way of saying Social Security is tax-free. It's left-hand, right-hand thing. What they're trying to get to is say they couldn't change the Social Security laws, which is what was put in place for that taxable nature of it. And so they, in order to get past what they wanted to get past, they said, okay, well, we're just going to do that $6,000 deduction.
Now per person.
So it's $6,000 per person over the age of 65 qualifies for the $6,000. Now, one of the caveats within this, and this is what you're going to feel on many of these that are there, is they're there, but then the phase-out applies. And these phase-outs are actually relatively low. So that's what you're seeing. A lot of what this act is they're giving you something, and then they kind of take it away. Because, yes, it applies for many. That was what they were trying to hit with that 88%. But for many, you're not going to see it because your income is too high. But as a general rule, if your income is below, if you're an individual, your income is below $150,000, then you're going to get an additional $6,000 deduction. If you're married, it's $300,000, and you get $12,000 deduction.
I thought it was 75.
Yeah. Or 75 and 100. Yes, and thank you. 75 and 150. Thank you.
Yeah. So if you're single and you make over 75,000, then that 6,000
starts phasing out.
Phasing
so it's not
out.
It goes away immediately. Yeah. So most things are phased in. So it's not
and
a cliff.
And then if you're married, it's double that.
Yeah.
So it's 150,000. Yeah. Okay.
So
great.
That's one thing that's out there. I'll mention briefly here, but you talked about one of the benefits of this being is making things permanent. There was a lot of questions about the estate tax threshold because it was whether it was going to go up or go down. Well, this new law here puts in place that it is now $15 million is your estate per person, which it was what it was under the ticker, or close to it, but it was set to go way down from there. $15 million in my mind is a good number, because at seven, where it was going to go down to, that's high, and many people won't get close to that, but there are many that would. When you look at your 401ks, you look at your IRA, your house, your life insurances, and other things that you have that would be includable in that, and it was close enough to where people had to start worrying about it. Many right. didn't end up having to do it, but you had to think about it. At 15, many people can say, okay, not even going to worry about it. Now, there are some things you can do within that that would make sense, maybe electing portability or otherwise, but it's going to certainly simplify the estate tax planning process.
So that helps with, like, local farmers with how much they can pass on.
Yeah, farmers, yeah. business owners, have a house or two. It's in Traverse City, they're highly appreciated, right? So some of those, imagine that.
Property on the Bay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, what's
like
interesting
that.
About that, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal about a situation where an individual, they hadn't filed for portability. Now, discuss and define what portability means, John.
So well, it's that question that we asked earlier today about the $250,000 gain that would have gone to a spouse. So electing portability is when one spouse passes away, many people say, oh, I'm way below that $15 million threshold. I don't even need to think about it. Had they elected portability, all of the tax attributes from that would have transferred over, and so part of it would have then been able to apply towards the gain now.
How does one elect portability?
You file a form. You talk to your accountant.
Yeah, it's form 709 or 706, whatever that is. Yeah. So in essence, you're doubling the amount that's going to pass mm-hmm. outside of estate tax. Mm-hmm. So if an individual's, let's say estate is at $10 million, and then he hits the jackpot, let's say he's the survivor, and his estate goes to $20 million, his estate then, and he hasn't elected portability because she passed away first, $5 million of their estate is going to be subject to estate tax, and mm-hmm. that's not chump change.
Right.
That, in this case, would be about $2 million that he would have to pay in estate mm-hmm. tax. So electing portability when one spouse passes away can be a great planning tool, yeah. just to put a fine point on that.
Because estate tax is about 40%, correct?
Correct. Of the
federal,
amount over $15 million. So it's not cheap.
Nope.
Yes. All right.
So you want to be below those numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. And most are, to
yeah.
be sure.
Right. Yes.
But if you're in the range, keep that in mind should one spouse pass
away. But electing
away.
Portability is a good example. Again, we'll go back to the one that was just here before of going through that estate and having a step of that $250,000. Some of the tax attributes follow with it as
sure.
well. And so it doesn't have to be just that gigantic numbers that are there. Again, you have to decide, was it worth filing the forms back in the day to save the taxes when the primary residence was sold, right? Those
mm-hmm.
are some of those attributes you have to think about. So it's not just gigantic dollars. But now there's a cost to doing the forms too. So it is I don't say it immediately, but you should think about it for sure.
Yeah,
so.
It's not going to be that expensive to file that form. Really.
$15 million change, that's as of this tax year? That takes effect this tax year?
26. It 26. Takes effect, you bet.
But
2026.
The other one, the $6,000 extra deduction for seniors over 65, that takes effect this tax
25,
year, right?
And that's a temporary one, 25 through 28. Mm. But yes, that is effective this year. So we've already started rolling it into planning. And that's right. In my early planning, I'm seeing there are some that take it. Many phase are in a phased out, so they think they're going to get 12, but they get 4.5 because it's a wide yeah. phase out, right? But so it falls under that. Okay, thanks. I'm not going to turn it down. I got another $4,000 of deduction or $7,000 of a deduction. But is that going to really change anyone's tax return and change their habits? Probably not, mm-hmm. right? But that's, again, we're going to take it. It's there, and the deductions are there. We're going to use it. So
I think anything you get to keep is
yep,
good.
We like it.
So if you get to keep a little more, that's
yep,
a positive thing.
Another one that was made permanent was QBI, or qualified business income. Now people are like, well, that's related to business, isn't it? Wasn't it part of the one that was permanent? No, because that's paid at the individual level.
Yeah.
And so this certifies. That, to me, is one of the biggest impacts for small business owners. So the money that are listening to this radio show that are small business owners here in Northern Michigan, that would qualify, right? So that made that permanent. That was a huge potential loss, right? That's 20% deduction. That was a free deduction that's there on profits made in the United States. So,
So this just helps people plan yep, then, because yep. that temporary nature of the Tax and Jobs Act, put a little restraint out there
that
might end.
Now, the next piece, taxes on tips and overtime. Yeah. What happened with that?
That, I actually think, has most procedural impact, and many are going to feel that impact, which is exciting to me. Interesting enough, that's actually a revenue generator versus a revenue detractor here, if you will. But taxes or tips in overtime now are tax-free. Asterisk, dot, 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 star, dot, dot, dot. Right? So that's one of those things. So in general, we can say they're tax-free. Now here's the kicker for it. There are phases. There's limits on that amount. So individuals earning tips now are going to have a portion of their taxes phased in. So I'll find out the thresholds there. But interestingly, I also have to say the dot, 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 because it's income tax-free, not Social Security, right? So they had to pay for that $6,000 standard deduction or the $6,000 senior deduction, which was going to impact, in theory, Social Security. Well, they had to pay for it some way. So by doing this income tax on tips and income tax-free on tips and overtime, those are now going to be subject to, when people start claiming them because it's tax-free, are going to start paying Social Security and Medicare tax on that. So it is a little bit of a left-hand, right-hand thing. But overall, it's a good thing, right? So, I mean, we've made changes where individuals that were that are eligible for or overtime can now have that be tax-free. So
the amount is up to $25,000 in qualified tips in tax years 25 through 28. There's a phase out of $100 per $1,000 of adjusted gross income, starting at $150,000 or $300,000 for married joint filers, which is going to include most people.
That's most people. Yeah, that's the tips one, and the overtime one is $12,500 or $25,000 if you're doing a joint return. So it does a little bit of confusing of which one it is, but in general, between $12,500 to $25,000 is going to be tax-free, which is going to get most of what you really get on the tips and the overtime. One caveat in the overtime, it's truly on the overtime part. So, like, if you're making time and a half, it's on the half time, not the extra time. So, again, what they're really trying to do is many people wouldn't have reported that before because on tips, they're just not going to report it. So the theory is by now getting more reporting because it's tax-free, you're actually going to get a little bit more overall.
How do they break that? Like, how do you indicate on a tax form how much you earned overtime?
They just came out with the draft forms here this week. They just published those. So, yes, they're still trying to figure that out, which is one of those things with these. It's fun. They'll pass these laws. And I'm excited to see a draft one already. That, if that tells you that's how much impact is going to have on many, many people here, that one I think has the most impact that they're doing it this quick. Many times you don't have it until midway during tax season, and they're still putting out forms out. For example, one of those, we get lots of questions on the mega accounts. That's a new part of these. Well, I'm looking at Dennis and Heidi here and saying, well, I'm going to liken that one to a little bit of how are the Roth Simple IRAs going, which was that was part of the Secure 2.0, and they still don't know about that.
Yeah, she laughs because the paper these companies have still not incepted or put these into force.
Yeah, and when was that passed?
That was 22.
Class. 22. So, you know,
a while back, right?
So that mega account is a fundamental institutional level change that is going to take my opinion, is going to take a long time for them to figure that out. So that's one that I say, well, thanks, I'm going to take it. But at the same time, we'll see when it happens.
Keep saving, folks. Yeah. There you go. We have a phone call.
Yeah, Dave is on the line for New Retirement Radio in Traverse City. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, guys. Great show, as always. Hey, listen, you piqued my interest with Social Security tax or no tax for seniors. Where does that stand?
Well, that's right. I think that's where, according to the White House, they would say 88% of Americans, based on this new law, are not going to be paying any income tax on their Social Security. Again, whether I believe that percentage is a good thing, I don't know, but that would be there.
And well, it's an increased deduction of $6,000 per individual or $12,000 for anyone over 65. So just think about this. At a 20% tax rate, let's just say average, it's about $2,400 for a couple in real tax savings.
Okay.
So, all right, if that helps you, sir. A portion of your income may be non-taxable, or an increasing portion, because your standard deduction, in essence, went up from $30,000 to about $42,000, $45,000 or so for a couple who are both 65 or older.
Yep. And here's the unfortunate thing. If you're in the 22% bracket, you're probably not getting that deduction because it's probably phased out, or for sure the 24.
So John, how about this scenario where you haven't started Social Security, you're over 65, you still get that standard deduction, correct?
You do, yes. Yeah. So it's technically not at all attached to Social Security. You can also say, you might as well say your interest income is tax-free if you're over 65. Right. You could. It's just another increased standard deduction.
If your income's within the limits.
Yeah. I keep hitting that.
We're going to move on, but I want to make sure, Dave, you're clear on all that?
Well, it kind of got in the weeds and you lost me. Bottom line is, if I'm in the 22% income bracket, I won't be having more in my pocket, or I will?
You may. Again, you're talking to an accountant who depends on what phase of the 22% bracket you're in. If you're in the 12, you'll be okay, and you're in the 0, you'll be okay. Again, for you, I'd say probably talk to your specific accountant.
If your income is less than $150,000, if you're married filing jointly, then you'll get that full deduction.
That's a fair way.
If it's less than $150,000, okay? That's a pretty wide.
Okay, that explains it. That explains it a lot better.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, to be sure. Now, $150,000. Is a pretty good
it is
amount.
A good record.
So it's,
and why I keep qualifying it is because it depends on the, I can't just hit a percentage or a rate because it depends on if you're in the capital gains rate or the ordinary, kind of fluctuates inside there.
Yeah.
So you're right. I like that. If it's 150,000 modified AGI.
Right. That's going to hit most people. Yeah. So the married couples who qualify can reap a total deduction in 2025 of $46,700. That's a significant deduction. Now, again, that's if you're qualifying within the income limits, which you'll want to know. Now, next, John, there are some other points in terms of what
There's some other fun ones out there I think. One that you'll probably hear a fair amount of media about is the vehicle loan or the auto loan interest deduction. So that is a $10,000 deduction that you up to $10,000 that you can get. Again, it's phased out by income and it's phased out by there's limitations of, okay, it has to be assembled in the United States, things like that, which, again, it's good. I'm going to certainly take this, and I think that many individuals, it's going to be a benefit for them. At the same time, if you really step back and you look at it and you say, okay, if you have $10,000 of vehicle loan, let's assume it's 5% interest, and I'm, astroking all that kind of stuff, but that's $200,000 of vehicle loans. Now, it phases out at 100. So if you have $200,000 of vehicle loans at 100,000 of income, we have to have other discussions, right? So, but again, I'll take the interest. It's there. I'm not going to turn it down. But when you look at it, it's like, again, it's they're going to give it to you, but you really look the practicality that's there. So.
Sure. Now, is this for new loans only or for existing loans as well? Do we know that answer? John, I'll put you on the spot on that one.
You put me on the spot on that one. Mm-hmm. I'll get back with you on that
one. Okay, great.
You can do some humming or something like
all
that.
All right. Now, also, then there's a new deduction, and it's an addition to the standard.
It's new. It's indebtedness incurred by the taxpayer after December 31, 2024 for the purchase of, and that is secured by first lien on any applicable passenger vehicles for personal use.
I think we got that question answered.
New only is what you're saying there.
Yeah. New loans, not doesn't have to be, well, new loans.
Okay.
So new indebtedness incurred.
Could be a new loan on a used
Among
car.
Among other restrictions, applicable passenger vehicles must have had their final assembly in the United States.
Ah.
So
again, with a modified AGI in excess of 100,000, it's capped.
Would it also apply to a Corvette, John? I'm just curious.
Is it assembled in the United States?
Yeah.
Well, then yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Listen to that, Ron.
Yeah.
Corvette.
How about an excavator?
Now buy a Corvette. buy a Corvette with less than $100,000 of income and see what bank financing. And there's an interesting thing. A key loan or key factor there would be that it has to be first debt. So generally speaking, again, it's got to be first lien and otherwise. So
can't be on your home.
It can't be like a
equity loan or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, next, there's also a $1,000 deduction for gifting or charitable gifting that's going to be allowed.
That's a fun one. Yeah. So I think one of my overall comments on this is, as an accountant, I greatly appreciated on behalf of most Americans that the TICTA, and back in 2018, significantly simplified taxes. People always ask me, like, oh, are you sad by that? I'm like, no, I love this. Because this one statistic was 85% of Americans would just be able to do a very simple form and not, you know, it'd be very, very straightforward. And I agreed, right? Because for 85% of Americans, it made it so simple for their taxes. That's a fantastic thing. Now, I have plenty of work with the other 15%, right? Because that other 15 got more complicated. Unfortunately, now you asked on the $1,000 contribution for charity. That's great. By simplifying back in 2018, that was wonderful for most Americans. The problem is it changed spending habits. So because it changed spending habits, people stopped giving to charities because they're like, I'm no longer getting the benefit for it. Mm-hmm. So now they're trying to kind of reverse back and, you know, ask, they want their cake and eat it too. So they still have the increased standard deduction, but now I have this extra $1,000 deduction for donating to charity. It's not an itemized deduction. It's another deduction. So do you need to keep receipts? Do you not? Well, you don't for itemized deductions, but you do need for other deductions now. So it made this more complicated, unfortunately, which is difficult. And so, again, I'm not answering your question straightly because I can't, because it is an other deduction now versus a standard deduction.
And Sean,
it's another deduction that's not based on the standard deduction. It's outside of it, but it allows someone to deduct up to
$1,000
per individual, correct?
Correct.
So a couple could deduct up to $2,000 of charitable giving. Mm-hmm. Now, is this applicable in 25?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
I think it starts in 26.
In 26. Yeah, it's applicable in 26. Sorry. Oh, so it's applicable for planning in 25 for 26.
So you might want to wait until January to make that.
Huh.
And I would also say, to me, the most impactful charitable giving you can do now is what's called a QCD, or Qualified Charitable Donation, which comes straight from your IRA if you have an RMD. Also, which should be done in January and February. I tell a lot of the charitable organizations that I consult with that it's no longer applicable in December. Your giving period is now January and February. That's when you have to be out asking.
So. Right. But for those of us who might be under the RMD age, we can benefit by this.
Correct, by this $2,000. Yeah. Dennis is checking to make sure that we're correct.
Yes.
On the 26.
Contribution to retirement accounts or HSAs or doing QCDs could lower AGI or adjusted gross income for those nearing the $500,000 SALT phase-out thresholds. Only IRA owners and beneficiaries age 70 and a half or older qualify for a QCD, a qualified charitable distribution. But those amounts that you do give direct to charity still in 25 and later still qualify for that amount. And as long as if you don't want to call your RMD income taxable, required minimum distribution income, you can give it directly to that charity through your IRA, thus avoiding the income tax on that amount. That could save you, depending on your tax bracket, up to 35%.
Right, and then you won't need that extra deduction because it doesn't even count in your income.
If you're saving 35%, you're not going to be able to take advantage of that deduction anyway. So that's a huge benefit still of the QCD. The qualified charitable distribution. So estate taxes partially increased, reduced federal income tax rates, extended permanently was a big part of this. The standard deduction increase did occur as well for the regular standard deduction. The extra senior deduction phased out, but still applies to most folks. And then the charitable deductions for non-itemizers, that is $1,000 per individual after year 2026 on 1/1/26. So are there any other major pieces available in here? What about the child tax credit?
Yeah, the child tax, that was just an extension of what was there already. So it was $1,000, got increased to $2,000, and got added into continued into $2,000. So it is there. You have up to a $2,000 child tax credit that's in place. So that's there now. I did confirm that the above-the-line charitable deduction is effective 2026 forward. So it's not for 25.
Right.
One of the couple new ones, some fun ones, is there's now the it's a credit for doing charitable dollars for or scholarship funds For essentially, it's a workaround to get for covering for private tuition for private schools that they can put in place. Now, that's not effective until 27 because it'd have to go through the schools, but essentially private schools, now you get a credit for that. So that's up to $1,700.
Okay, what is that again? What are you talking about, John?
So starting in 2027,
OBA creates a tax credit for charitable contributions to tax-exempt organizations that provide scholarships to elementary and secondary school students.
So now what they're essentially doing is they want to make sure it goes through a qualified account. So here's a theoretical idea. So you might have a foundation attached to a school. You create, if my kids go to that private education school, you create inside the foundation a scholarship for the John Sluice Kids Scholarship, which then is awarded to the kids of John Sluice inside of the organization that's there. And then in theory, it's up to $1,700 per child that would be there. So if I had my five kids, I'm going to get it times five. Isn't a straight credit. So it's a workaround, left hand, right hand, to basically get private education funded to some extent.
So $1,700 times five, in that case, if you've got five children that attend that institution. That's pretty significant.
And it's a credit. And again, it's a dollar for it's a credit.
It's not a deduction.
So that is a big one. And it's going to take a little while to implement because they have to, I would imagine that school foundation doesn't have this in place. So they have to put it in place to get it. So that's going to be a formality that's there to check. That's a big one. That's a big passage that's kind of quiet inside of it. So
it's some relief for people who send their children to private school.
Yes.
Excellent.
All right.
We'll do it again next Thursday live. Saturday, this program will repeat. Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio. In the meantime, you can contact John Sluice if you have a tax question. 935-1590, In Trust CPA. Dennis Prout, Prout Financial Design, 947-3992.